Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Afte, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We are going to be talking today with several eminent figures, people that we rely on, people that you should rely on as well, about one of the most important challenges of our time that is largely, if not almost entirely, being unremarked, unnoted, let alone properly addressed. In fact, I had a chance to speak with a senior member of Congress the other day who said there are many problems our country is facing. Arguably, the most important of them, which is the least understood, is the one that will be the focus of today's conversation, starting with our friend and colleague, the great Reggie Littlejohn. That would be the surrender of American sovereignty to the World Health Organization as part of the leading edge of an effort to take down our country, our sovereignty, yes, but our states' rights, our individual medical freedoms, and so much more, by, among others, the Chinese Communist Party. Reggie Littlejohn is, of course, a lawyer trained at Yale University, a litigator in a previous life, these days a very important figure in the public intellectual firmament as a result of the great work that she does at her organization, Women's Rights Without Frontiers, which she founded and of which she is the president. She's also partnered up with us in a number of wonderful ways. She is a member of our Committee on the Present Danger China. She co-founded with me and directs the Stop Vaccine Passports Task Force of the committee. And she is also a co-founder with us of the Sovereignty Coalition. Most recently, she has founded the Anti-Globalist Alliance. And we'll be talking with her about, well, a lot of that in connection with what is happening as we speak to move us inexorably forward towards the global governance gambit, the outcome that the Chinese Communist Party and others seek to achieve, ultimately at the expense of the United States of America and its people. Reggie, it is wonderful to have you back. Thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us, especially in light of a very important webinar that our Committee on the Present Danger China and its Stop Vax Passports Task Force sponsored yesterday, in which you played, as always, a leading role. Welcome and talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Thank you, Frank. The webinar yesterday was called Free Fall into Tyranny, What is at Stake at the World Health Assembly, which is happening on May 29th and into early June. And what is at stake is our national sovereignty, our personal medical freedom, and also just a terrible business plan that the World Health Organization seems to be putting together, which was part of what Dr. Meryl Nass was talking about. But basically, there's going to be a vote on two instruments, the International Health Regulation Amendments and the Pandemic Treaty. And between the two of those, it will mean the end of our medical freedom, because the World Health Organization, if they get what they want, is going to be given the power to mandate whatever they think is our medical care. So they will be able to mandate vaccines, require them, mandate lockdowns, mask mandates, quarantines, closure of borders. What they want the power to basically run the show if there's any kind of a public health emergency of international concern, which could be a virus, it could be anything that they think affects public health. It could be racism. It could be depression. It could be climate change. So that's one thing that
gun violence is a particular favorite of mine.
Gun violence. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it's not just that they can, and it's in the person of the Director General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Ghebreyesus. It's not just that he is going to have the sole authority to designate when a country has, or a region for that matter, a public health emergency of international concern. He also has the power, as I understand it, Reggie, to dictate what must be done in response to it. You've mentioned a number of horribles that most of us remember from what was done on the basis of his advice previously. Talk a little bit about the difference between advice and compulsion and how that's manifested in these two treaties that are now being worked up.
Well, in the International Health Regulation amendments, proposed amendments, the last one that we've seen, and they have not released another one in over a year, but they had stricken the words non-binding out throughout it so that the intention is that it would be a binding legal instrument, which is in fact a treaty. Okay, so even the International Health Regulation amendments are a treaty. And then they use the word shall between the two documents hundreds of times. Shall means that something is required, that every nation shall do this and shall do that. Right. And
amending language that says may, as
right,
I understand.
From may
it.
To shall.
It's and, a clue.
Well, another clue is that they published an article saying that this is a legally binding document. So that's a clue as well. In their view, it's legally binding. Which makes it a treaty, which means that it should have to only be implemented with the advice and consent of the Senate. And of course, they're refusing to call either of these documents a treaty because they don't want to go through that process.
Right, because that would require a two-thirds majority of the Senate to approve them for ratification. So, Reggie, just to be clear, what do we know about this Tedros Ghebreyesus? I mentioned our experience with his advice in the COVID process, but where does he come from? What's his special expertise that should make him, as I say, the arbiter of every medical decision in the world, effectively?
So he's from Ethiopia, and I understand that he was part of the Tigray resistance, which was, you know, a communist resistance, and I believe through some murky process, he was basically handpicked by the Chinese Communist Party to head the World Health Organization. And he showed the fact that he kowtows to China in the way that he basically became the mouthpiece for the Chinese Communist Party during the early days of COVID. Whatever they said, he agreed with. So, and by the way,
which was basically described by him and I think the Chinese as well as the China model. Was it not?
Yeah, I'm not sure if he dubbed it the China model, but you can just look at what China was doing and look at what he was doing and see that it's the China model. The China model during COVID was, you know, mask mandates, vaccine mandates, quarantines, lockdowns. You know, there was footage from Shanghai where people had been soldered into their apartment buildings and they were told that they would get food and they did not get food. And they were standing out on their balconies at night and just in these high rises screaming into the darkness. And you could just hear these haunting howls, you know, reverberating off the buildings. It was like an image of hell. And that's the China model. That's what it leads to. And that's what they have in store for all of us if we do not resist.
And to an amazing degree, that China model was, in fact, implemented here in the United States as well. Most of us remember some of the horrors. But again, the difference between it being advisory was that was adopted voluntarily by, in some cases, doctors and pharmacists and, you know, medical associations and hospitals and even governments. But it wasn't compulsory. This would be a different thing altogether. And you've, and among other places, this webinar talked about the digital gulag. And we have to take a very short break, Reggie. I want to get into that with you because this really adds incredibly grave, you know, context to what we're talking about here. We'll be right back with more with Reggie Littlejohn of Women's Rights Without Frontiers right after this.
Yeah.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Revolutionary War General Benedict Arnold's name became synonymous with treason when he plotted to surrender George Washington to the enemy. In the days to come, we'll be examining the record of perfidy being compiled by our current Commander-in-Chief, Benedict Biden. The question that currently looms is, will Biden's impending treasonous surrender of our sovereignty, states' rights, and individual medical freedoms to a Chinese Communist Party-controlled asset named Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, the Director General of the World Health Organization, be aided and abetted by members of Congress? Most have no idea they'd be doing just that by approving today a massive appropriations bill that, among myriad other problems, unrestrictedly funds the WHO as it prepares, just 65 days from now, to embroil us in two wholly anti-constitutional treaties. Urge your representative now to reject such a betrayal at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Affney. Back. And Reggie Littlejohn is in the house, I'm pleased to say, our colleague in the Sovereignty Coalition, which is top of mind at the moment, because what is at stake in a House legislation that is supposed to be acted on the 22nd of March is surrendering our sovereignty to this Marxist bureaucrat from Ethiopia, named Tedros Ghebreyesus, the Director General of the World Health Organization. It's bad enough that that's in prospect, Reggie, but there are three features of all of this sort of treaty making that's going on. Sub Rosa, stealthily, without the public's knowledge, let alone informed assent. Talk to us about this digital gulag piece. What's meant by that and what are its implications?
Well, the digital gulag is basically censorship and surveillance combined with digital IDs and central bank digital currencies. If you put all that together, then they will absolutely control every aspect of our lives. So in terms of surveillance, in the agreement, they want to be able to surveil every human being, plants, animals, the environment. All of this is the pretext of it is, what if somebody gets sick? But what it does is it gives them the ability to surveil every aspect of our lives. Then in terms of censorship, countries are agreeing that they will not only combat misinformation and disinformation, which is basically anything that the WHO disagrees with, but that they will prevent it. So I don't know how you prevent that information even coming out. It sounds like the most severe form of censorship. It's not just like, oh, well, we're going to combat this wrong information. It's like, we're going to make sure that you aren't even able to say what you want to say.
And that has a feature too with doctors. And this goes to the heart of that medical practice business. If they actually tell you things that you're not supposed to be told, according to the World Health Organization, they can lose their licenses. They can otherwise face sanctions. In some cases, in France, for example, apparently they're going to throw them in jail.
Right. This is truly frightening. And so then the other piece of the digital gulag is the digital ID, which you will need to be in good standing. In other words, you need to have had every vaccine, every other medication that they want you to have, and not be criticizing them, not be promoting misinformation or disinformation, and then you can live a normal life. But if you rebel in any kind of way, if you resist, they can shut you out from your credit cards, your bank accounts, your ability to vote, your ability to travel, basically every aspect of civilized life. So that's the enforcement.
And in the process, they're also going to be presumably accumulating other kinds of information about you, which would also lend itself to that social credit system of China, the China model in another respect, no?
Right. So they are sort of marketing this as, oh, it's going to be so convenient because you can basically do everything on this with this digital ID. And what they're not saying is, and we're going to be surveilling everything you do. And if we don't like what you're doing, we're going to cut you off so you can't do anything. So
that's this is really great. Chilling. Reggie, there's one other aspect of this that featured in our webinar. Please, folks, go to presentdangerchina.org and check out this Fall into Tyranny webinar we just did with Reggie Littlejohn and others. Meryl Nass was one of our guests. Dr. Meryl Nass is a great leader of our Sovereignty Coalition. Her website, doortofreedom.org, is also a great resource. Talk about one of the things that she's concluded about this, well, I don't know how else to describe it. It's the kind of clearinghouse of information that the World Health Organization wants to have for any kind of toxic, deadly pandemic quality virus or pathogen. And its purpose is to apparently not only know about it and thereby control it, but also to spread knowledge around the world about it. What has Meryl Nass concluded is the ulterior motive behind all that?
Well, I mean, she brought it up yesterday. I'm looking right here at the latest draft of the pandemic treaty, and I'm looking at Article 12, access and benefit sharing. So what they're basically saying is when a party, that's a nation, has access to a pathogen with pandemic potential, it shall share with the WHO any pathogen sequence information as soon as it is available to the party, okay? So what that's saying is basically if somebody discovers or creates a pathogen with pandemic potential, they have to put it into a WHO database immediately to be shared worldwide. I mean, what could possibly go wrong, right? All it takes is one person, one evil person, to have access to that database to launch biological warfare on the rest of humanity.
Is there a chance that there's one evil person in the world?
I don't know.
That's a pretty high probability.
You know,
to say nothing of a Chinese Communist Party filled with them. But her further point seemed to be that one purpose behind all this, which is very much in keeping with the desires of Bill Gates, one of the principal funders of the World Health Organization now, is depopulation. Talk a little bit about that.
Right. So what she was saying is just logically speaking, sharing this pathogen information with everyone, including members of the Chinese Communist Party, is so dangerous because either an evil person could use it to create a biological weapon or it could just be leaked like what we saw at Wuhan, that it is predictably going to be, you know, creating pandemic after pandemic after pandemic. Which, of course, is going to keep the WHO in business, by the way, and Big Pharma. But, you know, it's so insanely dangerous that what can you think of as a motive other than depopulation?
This is so frightening on so many different levels, whether it's the idea that Tedros becomes your doctor and tells you what you can and cannot have, whether it's the idea that anybody other than people we elect and hold accountable through elections will make decisions about our public health policy, whether it's a digital gulag or censorship or a pandemic factory. All of this has to be brought to a screeching halt, Reggie, doesn't it? And tomorrow, as we speak, or the 22nd of March, there will be a vote expected in the House of Representatives on legislation that will fully fund the World Health Organization and not require any kind of Senate advice and consent, both provisions of the previous House version of the Foreign Ops Appropriations Bill. What do we need people to do in the face of all of this dangerous activity?
Well, the first thing people need to do is go on to sovereigntycoalition.org. That's sovereigntycoalition.org. And right there on the homepage, there is an action that you can take to send a message to the leadership that's making these decisions and to your personal congressional representatives saying that we want to preserve the language that was in the House vote, House Appropriations Bill, which is that the WHO needs to be defunded. And any treaty coming out of the WHO can only be operationalized with the advice and consent of the Senate. And we need to do this right away because this vote is on the 22nd. So please contact your representatives and tell them this.
And when you do that, the further call is to withdraw from the World Health Organization, because even if we've stopped funding it, if we're still part of it, aren't we going to be subject to its dictates? And what needs to happen to accomplish that disengagement?
Well, we need a president that will disengage us. I mean, we know that, and that, you know, I'm not endorsing anybody. I'm stating a fact that President Trump withdrew us from the World Health Organization. But before that would take effect, President Biden put us right back in. So ultimately, we need to have somebody who sees things our way and will withdraw us from the World Health Organization.
Yeah. And time is not our friend here. We need action on as much of this as we can get done. Opposition to this bill, opposition to these treaties, and opposition to remaining in the World Health Organization, all of which, Reggie, I hope will become defining issues in this election campaign. Before that campaign is completed, of course, there will be presumably approval of these two treaties. So we need everybody's help in trying to raise the visibility of this and hold accountable your elected representatives. Reggie Littlejohn, thank you for what you do in that regard. Come back to us again with updates soon. God bless you. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Night after night in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back, and a very special welcome to Colonel John Mills, United States Army retired, a distinguished member of our Committee on the Present Danger China, as well as a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy. He served with distinction in uniform and as a civil servant in the Office of the Secretary of Defense with detail assignments to the National Security Council and the Homeland Security Department, a man of considerable expertise and insight, and we're always delighted to have him with us. Colonel, welcome back to Securing America, sir.
Oh, Frank, thank you. Always an honor to be on the show.
Thank you. I just had come over my transom as we were preparing to speak with you, a Substack from you about how the fiscal year 2025 Department of Defense requests for budget allocations is disarming America. Tell us about that. It seems as though there's more and more money being thrown at the Pentagon. What is the cause of concern, sir?
Well, after a number of years starting with the Trump administration, the DoD budget had been going upward. Okay, good. We just hadn't seen the monstrosity of the DoD generate new capabilities. The 25 budget flatlines, essentially caps, and essentially no growth from the previous year. And then if you look at the numbers, the Air Force is retiring 250 aircraft. The Navy is building 6 ships and retiring like 19 ships. I know math is considered at this point in time patriarchal and evil, but the math shows that's going the wrong direction. I would have given them a pass on two things if they had said, we're trying to tamp down the operations and maintenance expense of old platforms, which is true, and we're trying to build up new capabilities like drones. I would have given them a pass, but that's not what they said. So this budget, and there's a National Interest article by James Holmes, it says it makes no sense, and the budget makes no sense.
Okay.
This would sound as though it makes particularly no sense, as we may find ourselves in the very near future in a shooting war with a, as I say, peer adversary. In fact, one that may, in certain respects, be more capable than even our military, and that would be that of the Chinese Communist Party. John, to what extent are the mismatch between the funding levels being sought, the programs being pursued, the retirements underway, and this looming threat, which you have been at the forefront of explaining to the rest of us, notably through our webinars at the Committee on the Present Danger of China?
Well, we have an example here. The Biden team wants to build an expeditionary port, a pier in Gaza. Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. The only problem is that takes about 30 to 50% of the U.S. Army's capability. It's the U.S. Army that actually is the lead service for theater watercraft support and expeditionary port capabilities, which they frankly haven't used since the Vietnam era. Mm-hmm. And so this takes 30 to 50%. We'll never see that back. And the budget line item for Army for rail float container, I don't even know what that means anymore. Sounds like we're still running steam engines from the Brooklyn Army Terminal to Bayonne, New Jersey. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. It goes down 25%, and we're giving away 30 to 50% of our port capability.
Wow. And when you say we're giving it away, this is supposed to be a temporary port, as I understand it.
You're expecting that
nothing's more permanent than a temporary arrangement.
We'll never see that again. It's bye-bye.
And John, there are a whole host of issues associated with the port, not least of which is I fear it will be used to do two things. One, bring in a lot of stuff that simply is sustaining Hamas, not just humanitarian stuff, but construction and who knows what all else. But also, John, there's talk, Senator Tuberville was discussing it, that this port might be used to exfiltrate, shall we say, hundreds of thousands of so-called refugees from Gaza and bringing them to the United States. For so many reasons, this really seems like a very bad idea. Especially if American forces are put in harm's way as a result. Your thoughts?
Hey, when South Vietnam fell, we did the right thing and accepted in South Vietnamese refugees. And we did it in a very organized, dignified manner. Okay, that was lawful. We just saw from Afghanistan, we'll fly in tens of thousands of people. We have no idea who they are. You know, many of them are clearly on the other side. Same thing here. Of course, that's their game. And of course, they're going to be doing this. We can't trust the Biden team to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing good about this port. It's ridiculous. And the Army just gives away 30 to 50% of its capability, and the budget goes down.
Yeah.
You know, Christine Warmoth.
Yeah. Especially at a moment when those kinds of capabilities might be very important in the Pacific, no?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Christine Warmoth wants to cut Army Special Forces. And then we announce we're putting Army Special Forces on Kinmen 4,000 feet away from China. Okay, this makes no logical sense. Mm. We're cutting Army Special Forces, but we're putting some of them forward on a 4,000 feet away from China on Kinmen, also Penghu, also the main island of Taiwan proper. So good that we're putting a deterrent there, but then why are we cutting them?
Right. Well, putting them deterrent may be more sensible, a little farther away from the coast of China, because it sounds as though those will be not just a tripwire, but very quickly overrun, of course. John, I mean, this is very distressing. I wanted to talk to you, though, about one other topic, which draws on your expertise with, well, a whole host of issues, but particularly in the sort of cyber domain. There's been a lot of talk, as you know, lately, about a particularly troubling aspect of the pre-kinetic, unrestricted warfare the Chinese Communist Party has been waging against us, and that would be the use they make of a platform best known for, oh, I don't know, silly dance videos called TikTok. What have we learned in the course of, among other things, congressional deliberations about a ban, so-called ban on TikTok, actually a transfer of ownership from the Chinese Communist Party to an American entity that should be very troubling to those of us who are concerned about particularly the national security of the United States.
TikTok is two things. It's an intelligence collection platform. It's also a tailored mass psychosis platform. We're using big data analytics and artificial intelligence. They can feed back to the tailored to the individual user what triggers them. So if you're triggered by cat videos, they will overwhelm you with cat videos. If you're gender dysphoria, they will overwhelm you with positive and negative reinforcement to just drive you into the ceiling. I've read the 12 pages of the bill. There are some concerning statements. Specifying a specific corporate name is not necessarily a best practice in legislation. It's whack-a-mole. They'll just rename, retitle, re-LLC themselves into something else, and they'll say, voila, we're no longer TikTok. I mean, come on, we've seen this over and over again. So, you know, there is some presidential discretion to declare other things. Now, I didn't realize that we had an official list of adversary nations. Now, it's the yes. list is not consistent between different U.S. codes. Commerce lists Venezuela. Department of Defense doesn't list Venezuela. They both list China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran, which is good. I never even knew we had an official list of adversary countries. That's a good thing, but it's not consistent. And that language
and it needs to apply here, I think, is definitely the case.
Yeah. The we got to always pressure test and red team legislative language. It always has unintended consequences. So we have to hit TikTok. But if they're just going to rise in a different form, like there's a carve out, if you're a product or travel review site, you're exempt. Well, TikTok will suddenly become, hey, we're a travel review
business.
Site.
You bet. John, just a quick question to you. You have in your free time post-government service devoted a lot of effort towards trying to assure the integrity of our elections. Are you concerned that this mass hypnosis vehicle, which is highly addictive, as you've indicated, through the refinement of this algorithm, may become an instrument for influencing, shall we say, if not controlling, the vote in the upcoming fall election to the interest of China and the detriment of the American people?
Yeah, this is not a partisan comment. This is absolutely reasoned and based on fact. Biden is hoping on two things to win this election. Taylor Swift and TikTok. Okay, that is their strategy for 2024. I think Trump can overcome this, but clearly TikTok is an asset that the Democrats prize. And yet they're at the same time saying it's owned and controlled by a foreign adversary. Well, which is it?
It could be both, I guess, but it's certainly something that they will exploit if they can, and so will our adversary, or I would put it, our mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party. John, just a very quick comment, half a minute here. The WHO is another instrument of the Chinese Communist Party's takedown of America.
Yeah, it's bad. It's a treaty that has not been ratified. It is a treaty. Let's just this silliness, but this is the deep staters constant. Well, there's so many other examples where we've blown off the constitutionally based treaty acknowledgement that's under the Senate. We've waived sovereignty on this so many times. We have to hit this
can't
hard.
Afford to do it. Can't afford to do it this time. That's for sure. John Mills, thank you so much for joining us today and for the great work that you do in so many capacities, but particularly your work here with us at Securing America. God bless you. We'll talk to you again soon. Be right back. Stay tuned for more.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute.
Revolutionary War General Benedict Arnold's name became synonymous with treason when he plotted to surrender George Washington to the enemy. In the days to come, we'll be examining the record of perfidy being compiled by our current commander-in-chief, Benedict Biden. The question that currently looms is, will Biden's impending treasonous surrender of our sovereignty, states' rights, and individual medical freedoms to a Chinese Communist Party-controlled asset named Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, the Director General of the World Health Organization, be aided and abetted by members of Congress? Most have no idea they'd be doing just that by approving today a massive appropriations bill that, among myriad other problems, unrestrictedly funds the WHO as it prepares, just 65 days from now, to embroil us in two wholly anti-constitutional treaties. Urge your representative now to reject such a betrayal at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back, and what a treat to have with us Xi Van Fleet. I want to be among the first to say I knew her back when, before she became a rock star on Tucker Carlson. Properly so, because she's, well, one of my favorite people, period, but especially so because she is in a particularly important population, in my estimation, and that is foreign-born American patriots. We don't have nearly enough of them, and she is an exemplar of why we need more. She is, among other things, a survivor of the Cultural Revolution in Mao Zedong's China. She has come to the United States and come to prominence here recently because she recognized some of the same things that happened to her and her countrymen and women there in the Cultural Revolution are now happening here. In fact, she's written a spectacularly important book on the subject entitled Mao's America. Xi Van Fleet, I am so delighted that you're back. Thank you for joining us, slumming it as it might be, but congratulations on a wonderful interview with Tucker Carlson. I'm so delighted that he put you up in lights.
Thank you so much, Frank. And you're right. We know each other back when, 2021. Indeed. And you invited me to your podcast and a frequent guest on your webinars. I'm just so grateful. Thank you so much, well, Frank.
The gratitude is really in my heart, and I'm so appreciative that you've come back. I want to just take a minute or two to kind of level set on your theory. It's not really a theory. It's your observation that we are witnessing a classic Maoist cultural revolution in our country now. And thank you so much for raising the alarm about it. Give us some of the things that are evidence of that phenomenon and its implications.
Yeah, I cannot emphasize enough that what's going on in America is not just Marxism, but it is Maoism, and specifically Maoism with American characteristics. Mao not only carried out a violent communist revolution to overthrow a sitting government, he also carried out a cultural revolution to really get power back from his own party. And that's really what's going on in this country, a cultural revolution to destroy the system by attacking the cultures, by changing the system and the people. And you don't see army. You don't see that it's a war going on, but it is a war. And it started with basically dividing the people into enemies of each other. And what happened in the Cultural Revolution is 20 million people died of what? By killing each other. It's not the CCP sent out troops to kill the people. It's people killing each other. We are almost there. And also really destroyed the foundation of a civilization. In China, it is the China past, the China's civilization. And here, it's our funding. And I can just go on and on, weaponize of young people. what is a cultural revolution in China? It's really a youth revolution, and carried out by the indoctrinated youth called the Red Guards. And we have them here. We have them here on the streets, on campuses. They are called BMM, Antifa, and social justice warriors. I call them America's Blue Guards.
Wow. There's so much to drill down on there. Let me just say that an old friend, now alas departed, Andrew Breitbart, famously said, "Politics is downstream from culture." So the importance of the attack on a culture and shaping thereby, as you say, the system or the political features, the foundational character of this country, is why this is so devastating in terms of a Maoist style attack. And gee, I wanted to ask you concerning the young people. One of the themes of today's program is this kind of unrestricted warfare the Chinese Communist Party is waging against us. And I wanted to get in particular your thoughts about TikTok as an instrument for that warfare, especially aimed as it is at our young people.
That's absolutely the case. I can't imagine that we allow, not we, I think it's the progressives, the American Marxists, allow this absolutely communist instrument to get into our young people, especially to get into their mind, to push all sorts of agendas. And we allow it. Why? Because it's useful for the American Marxists. And that is absolutely an indication that this happened because we have enemies within, want to use a foreign instrument to overthrow our own system.
Is there any doubt in your mind that that is a purpose-built platform by the Chinese
absolutely.
Communist Party to do this?
Not even the slightest doubt, because the same thing is not allowed in China. We know it. In China, they have something similar from the same company, but it's totally controlled. And the youth only have access to that in a certain time, and it's all about education.
And the content is very
yes.
different. Educational, as you say, and also inspiring, I think, to hard work and productivity, to say nothing
you know
of love
why?
Of China.
I really want to make it very clear. Why? Because at this time, Xi Jinping has power. He doesn't need revolutionaries. He needs work bees working for his empire. And why we allow this in America? Because the American Marxists and communists, they want revolutionaries. They want the youth to be activists to overthrow the system.
And to the extent that the content is different and is purpose-built by the Chinese Communist Party for
absolutely.
Your sense of it, Xi, I take it, is that they are weaponizing it to control and channel the revolutionary zeal of
yes.
our young people against our country?
I think more and more people see it. And I think it's important that we all see it. And we really take it as a weapon from the CCP.
And we disarm that weapon, I suppose, as well. Xi, we have to take a very short break. When we come back, I want to drill down a little bit further on some other aspects of this revolutionary activity and the takedown of our country that the Chinese Communist Party and their American Marxist friends have in mind for us. Be right back. Stay tuned. We're back, and we're continuing
an incredibly important, really very timely conversation with a woman who has personally experienced cultural Marxism in her native China, and who has survived it, thank God, and come here to warn the rest of us that it is now being unleashed by the Chinese Communist Party, yes, but also by their friends here in the United States. In fact, this is the subject of our book, The Indictment, the unrestricted warfare that these two elements have been waging against us. Xi, thank you so much for your insights into all of this and for your very important new book as well, Mao's America. Talk to me, if you would. We spoke earlier in the program with other guests about this World Health Organization agenda of the Chinese Communist Party. Xi Jinping, as you know, the General Secretary, has boasted about remaking the world, according to his likes, including using what he terms global governance as a means of effecting that kind of transformation, fundamental transformation, I think Barack Obama would call it. Talk to us about this in the context of the revolution these Marxists, foreign and domestic, are trying to perpetrate here.
One thing is important to know that communism is globalism. And since very young, we all sing the song International. That means communism has to be international, has to be global. And in order to do that, they have to destroy the national sovereignty. And that's what UN is really is designed for. That's what the World Health Organization is designed for. And it was absolutely, they all were taken over by the CCP. The CCP has bribed the leaders there, and they are pushing a globalist agenda. And it is should be very, very obvious to the free people in the West.
Mm. And yet it's really not so much. You know, there's this sort of notion that, oh, it's a good thing. There's a global commons, and to have multilateral participation, you know, to fight pandemics, for example, or, you know, exploit the ocean floors, or, you know, to promote trade, or for any other number of reasons. But what you've said is so crucial here. Xi has, as have his predecessors, assiduously worked to essentially take over these multilateral organizations. In the case of the WHO, they've placed a Marxist from Ethiopia as its director general. But my question to you, and as I said, this is so frightening, really, because we are very far down the tracks. Congress, as we speak, on Friday, the 22nd of March, is expected to vote to approve more funding for this World Health Organization in the immediate run-up to the finalization of not one but two agreements that would do just what you said, would crush our sovereignty,
yes,
and promote this communist global governance agenda. How, if you had an opportunity, and let's just say you do in talking on this air, to speak directly to members of the United States House of Representatives, Xi, about a vote, immediately pending vote, to promote, to strengthen, to empower this Marxist Tedros Ghebreyesus, for example, what they should do about
that.
Yeah,
I would just remind them, we put them there because they're supposed to represent us. If they gave up that power that we entrust in them and give to the international organizations such as World Health Organization, we no longer have freedom, we become slaves. Because who make the decision in those international organizations? They are not elected by anybody. Right. They become the
tyrants. Or accountable to them.
Yes, right? Exactly.
And yeah. And this is a key point, because again, the system, you've seen tyranny, you've been subjected to it. You came to this country to get away from it. You've devoted much of your life of late, including this important new book, Mao's America, warning us about how perishable freedom is. It's not guaranteed if you let your constitution go. And just a further point on what you just said about representing us, every single one of those representatives, Xi, as you know, swore a solemn oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Yes. So your, you know, recommendation, your advice, your warning, your appeal to those representatives at this moment?
The same, just what you said. Defend our Constitution and defend our rights and our freedom, and do not give it away to someone over there in the international cartel, I would call it at this point.
Yeah, international cartel is a very good, apt way to describe it. And again, one other aspect of this, because I think as a foreign-born American patriot, you have such an appreciation of it, how hard it is to get your freedom back, to recover your sovereignty if you've given it up. You know, there are people who say, well, Donald Trump, if he gets elected, he says he'll get us out of the World Health Organization. But is that a safeguard in light of the way these Marxists work?
So many Americans have no understanding of how easy it is to give away your freedom and how hard it is to get it back. Look at what's happening in China. The Chinese people are disarmed, totally controlled. They have no power. They have been slaves of the CCP for the past 75 years. And it will be a miracle that now they can overthrow the system, the government.
Should that be the object of American policy, Xi Van Vliet?
To safeguard.
To help the Chinese people overthrow?
Many people say that. I said no. The priority is to save our freedom and get the America back from the control of the Marxists and communists. Before that, we cannot defend anyone else.
I couldn't think of a more brilliant and succinct way to describe the challenge of our time. Thank you for your leadership in all of this, Xi Van Vliet. I hope you'll be coming back much more often. It's been too long since we've spoken. Thank you especially for Mao's America, a very strong appeal to the American people to do just what you said, protect our country. God bless you. We'll talk with you soon. We'll talk to the rest of you again next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.